Good evening, one and all. I know nearly, well, three quarters of the way through April. Time is whizzing by, but it's actually a nice day today here in Connecticut where I am. Yeah, a nice bit of sun, pottering around the garden, realising how much work I've still got to do out there. And well, let me just say that 2 weeks ago, my son came up and he filled all the holes in the garden that the dog had done. It is looking like the Somme out there right now, which, if those of you can relate to the First World War, yes, it's full of holes again. And I'm not sure what we're going to do, but why try and beat them? You're never going to win. Anyway, I am here, and so is my guest. Now, one of the things I've been doing over the last few weeks is sort of watching... Yeah, I find a series on the Amazon Fire Stick, one of these sort of weird series that, in fact, a lot from Australia of late, I might add. And I end up binge watching it. There was one about the offshore Navy, and last couple of weeks about policing the river police in Sydney Harbour and stuff like that. Of course, all the time you get through to the court cases and stuff like that. And whenever you get to them, you know, that they arrest the person and they say, you know, you have got the right to remain silent. Anything you say can be used against you in the court of law, etc., 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 that sort of stuff. Well, where did that happen? Where did it come from? It actually goes back to, well, an incident that happened in 1963, I think it was, and a court case in 66. Well, we'll find out a bit more about that, because everybody's heard of the Miranda warning, which is what that is. But where does it come from and what is it all about? Well, my guest today, he can tell us, because he's written this great book that goes into it all. I better introduce him, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Joe B. Wallenstein. Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Hi, Barry. How are you?
I am.
I'm doing good, man.
I'm fair to middling. All right for a Tuesday. I think I lost the Monday somewhere. I have no idea what happened to Monday, but that's part of getting old. You tend to lose days. But I have had some good news. I must admit, I did have some good news the weekend. That finally, here in Connecticut, in Bristol where I am, ESPN country, the local brewery will be opening again on Saturday.
A reason to live.
That's it. It's not so much me, it's the dog. No, seriously, the dog loves it down there. Everybody knows her. And, well, that's my excuse. You know, she's been pining not going down there to see her friends. But anyway, enough about that and everything. But yeah, as I said, this Miranda warning started in a court case in 66, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It actually started before that in a funny way, but here's the thing. In 1962, in this country, it was legal to be taken from your home, accused of a crime, denied legal counsel, kept in prolonged custody, and tricked into confessing. Mm. And none of that was illegal.
Wow.
None of that was illegal. It was just unfair and wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But something really amazing was happening in Phoenix. First of all, Phoenix, Arizona in those days. Phoenix was the birthplace of Barry Goldwater and Extremism in the Pursuit of Liberty is No Vice,
mm-hmm.
which set off the whole conservative movement in this country, or accelerated it. Well, it turned out that the very conservative Warren Court, the Supreme Court, Earl Warren, they were starting to take Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment cases. Fourth Amendment was Mapp versus Ohio. Fifth was Clarence Gideon, and Sixth was Escobedo. And they were all parts of the Bill of Rights. But the Bill of Rights in those days didn't apply to individuals in conflict with their states. It was a federal document. So along came Ernesto Miranda, who... by the way, was not innocent. This whole case is not about guilt or innocence.
Right.
It's about fairness. The most precious American virtue. It was about fairness. Had he been treated fairly? Is anybody who doesn't know his place in society, legally, socially, historically, can they be treated fairly? Well, Miranda had petitioned the, he was in jail. What was his problem? His problem was he was in jail. And he petitioned the Arizona Supreme Court, which denied his appeal. But it caught the eyes, the case caught the eyes of the American Civil Liberties Union. But the ACLU had no office in Phoenix in 1962 and 63. They dealt with what they called correspondent attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
And Miranda's case caught the eye of a fellow named Robert Corcoran, who decided that it was a case that could go to the, that they should look at to go to the Supreme Court, that the time might be right. But he couldn't do it because he had been in the district attorney's office when the Miranda case came through. But he needed an attorney, a guy who wouldn't shy away from adversity, who was tough and resilient and brilliant and could take the heat that was sure to come his way. And American Heritage magazine once did an article about 10 guys, 10 people you've never heard of, who have changed your life. And one of those people was John Flynn.
Right.
Phoenix, Arizona. Flynn had been a prosecutor. He'd had the guts to accuse the Arizona Republic, try them for income tax evasion, and ended up on their enemies list for the rest of his life. And they needed a guy who was tough and tough-minded. And so they reached out to Flynn. Flynn was not shy about controversy. And he agreed. He thought, you know, given the facts of Miranda, maybe now is the time for the Warren Court. And so he got involved. But it was also a time when the firm he worked for, Lewis and Rocha, was contacted by the Westinghouse Corporation and contracted to the largest liability, product liability case of its day. And the Miranda case, when it went through the courts the first time, was sort of, you know, just labeled the Mexican who raped the white girl.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And Flynn said, there's got to be something fundamentally flawed about a case that's labeled like that.
Mm.
So now you have two very flawed guys, Flynn and Miranda. Flynn was married 5 times.
Okay.
He was a chain-smoking gambler, you know. He was much bigger than life. And Miranda was a predator. He was a career criminal.
Hmm.
And these two guys changed the face of, more Flynn than Miranda, they changed the face of the legal system. Because after the case, the Miranda case jarred loose a recognition in this country that the system was in need of an overhaul. And after Earl Warren, Warren Burger, I think, was the Supreme Court chief, and it was the Burger Commission that put together all the components of what is now the criminal code, the Code of Criminal Procedure, that's now in place in all 50 states in this country. So ultimately, Flynn's sort of triumph, if you will, didn't happen the day after the case. He didn't become famous the day after the case. Became infamous in his hometown, but it took a while until he finally got the due he was deserved because they changed the face of the legal system. The things that happened to Miranda do not happen anymore in our legal system.
It's interesting. It's interesting that it was in this state because I believe, if my brain works occasionally, that they had something like a judge's warning in England back to the early 1900s.
Oh, that's probably true. That's probably true.
Yeah, it's just strange that, you know, you had all this. I think, 1912, I just checked it. 1912, they had a thing called like a judge's warning, which was like a shortened version. And yet it took another 50 years for it to be finally sort of put into law and become global law, basically. It's amazing when it took that long. But as you said, you know, it took to actually find somebody who was willing to do it and strong enough to stand up.
Right.
And do it would have been the hard thing, I'd have thought.
Well, even in Flynn's summation to the Supreme Court, he said, unless the Supreme Court embraces the principles of Escobedo, which was the conditions under which a suspect should be notified of his rights, he said, unless the Supreme Court takes the case seriously, it'll be another 50 years before it comes to Arizona, the kind of equal protection under the law, which was guaranteed in the Bill of Rights. Because one of the things Miranda did, it now applied the Bill of Rights to individuals in conflict with their individual states. Because there were no two jurisdictions that operated the same.
Right, right. That's a big thing in America, I know.
Yeah. So, and to me, the heart of the story, the heart of my book, is not about good guys and bad guys and guilty guys and innocent guys. It's about the American principle of fairness. Because the Supreme Court, when the cops came for Miranda, they said, Ernie, we'd like you to come downtown with us. We have some questions. And he, Miranda, told Flynn, standing there in the doorway, I didn't know if I had the right to tell these guys to go to hell. And Flynn said to the court, at that moment, the only person who could tell Miranda or any other human being in that circumstance what their rights are is the officer who has come to arrest them. And that's where the Miranda cards come from, because the cops carry cards,
right?
And they're supposed to read them their rights.
Yeah, you see it sometimes. So you get the card out and they read from the card, right?
Yeah, yeah. Now you want to hear something that's true that no writer could come up with?
What's that?
Miranda, on the last day of his life, was selling Miranda cards as souvenirs outside the Maricopa County courthouse.
Wow.
And he got enough money to play a poker game around the corner, drink beer, play cards. And he got into a fight with these two guys, and one of them stabbed him. When the cops came to arrest the guys who had assaulted him, they did not have their Miranda cards with them. And the barmaid, who was trying to keep him from bleeding to death, was going through his pockets. She was afraid he would die as a John Doe. He had no wallet, no identification, no green card. She found one of the cards. And she gave it to the cop, and the cop read the suspect's rights in the name of the guy they just killed.
Amazing.
Now, if a writer wrote that, you'd think...
you wouldn't believe it, would you?
But that's what actually happened.
Truth stranger in fiction, as they always say.
You bet, yeah.
All right. Your book, Flynn and Miranda, Your Right to Remain Silent... is it something that you've always been interested in, or is something, you know, that you think, well, hang on, the story needs to be told in a proper version?
Well, that's a great question, but I wish I could give you a 2-second answer. My interest in it started the night Miranda was killed. But the journey, I always say, and I get teased about this, it took Ulysses 10 years to get home from Troy. It took me much longer to get this book made. And I had tried to get it made as a movie. And one day I pitched it to Brad Pitt. And I wrote a script, which was optioned twice. But as I got older, I said to myself, you know, I don't want to be the guy that goes out of this world having written the song T for One.
Right.
Right? So I'm going to, as a writer, if you write a book, you don't need anybody's permission. Nobody has to option it. You don't have to get an A-list player. You don't need a distributor. You just write it. So finally I thought, look, when I went to meet John Flynn, I said to him, you must have been interviewed about this case 1,000 times. He said, I was interviewed about the case 1,000 times. He said, Joe, you're the only guy that ever asked me about the price I paid.
Right.
And yeah, 3 months after that conversation, he died.
Wow.
And it left me the only guy who could tell the story from his point of view. So I saw it not only as an opportunity, but an obligation, in a way, self-serving, I admit. But that's how I looked at it. I said, I've been given this. How could this just disappear into the ether of history?
Exactly. You felt obliged.
I felt obligated,
yeah. Yeah. Because it's not like you haven't written stuff. I mean, I know you've done a couple of books about the film industry, and you've also done Knots Landing and Seventh Heaven.
Oh, as a producer, yes.
Produced that, yeah. So it's not that it's strange, but this is something that most likely I can imagine sort of gnawing at the back of your mind, saying, you know, you've been given this. Somebody needs to. You've got to. He stood up and was counted. Now, I should do this and tell his story.
You got it exactly right, Barry. Good for you, man. You got it exactly right. Hey, and you're English, and you might be interested. You know, Knots Landing was produced by a fellow executive produced, created by David Jacobs.
Mm-hmm.
But David also created the series Dallas.
Remember all right.
Who shot J.R.?
Oh, you my goodness. Yeah, yeah, the shower that lasted 3 months. Yeah.
Right. Right. Well, I produced a miniseries called Dallas, The Early Years.
Okay.
So all through the 80s, that was like the thing, you know?
Yeah.
In the night. Yeah.
Oh, crikey. Now, obviously, you know, now the book's out, what sort of response have you had? Not just from, you know, the readers of that, but from the legal people, I'd have thought, as well, you'd have had something.
Oddly enough, not yet.
Oh.
Nobody's threatened me yet.
Just don't play any games of poker around the, in the backyard. Yeah, okay.
I think it's funny because, you know, I work at USC,
uh-huh.
the University of Southern California. And we have a lot of bright young minds there, and they're very impressed. They haven't read it yet, and they may never read it, but they're impressed that I wrote it and got it published, which is interesting, you know, because I really thought and still think, look, everybody in America, if they watched a TV show in the last 50 years, have heard somebody
say... Exactly, yep.
Yeah, you know, wouldn't you think there'd be the least bit of curiosity where that
came from? Where it comes from, I know.
So that's kind of what I'm hoping. And that, I think, you know, there are law schools, there are young people studying to be lawyers.
Mm.
Not one in 10,000 knows this story. There are lawyers who don't know this story.
That's amazing. So that amazes me. That really does. You know, something
yeah.
that's basically changed the face of justice.
Absolutely.
Not just
yeah.
in America, but in the end worldwide. And yet it's, you know, it's like these things that these things happen and people just don't know. You know, it's just...
They just sort of take it for granted.
Exactly.
It's always there.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, here's something. Think about this. This is amazing, and I think wonderful about America. You're walking down the street, and the long arm of the law taps you on the shoulder and says, "Barry, either you're under arrest." You go, "What?" The entire weight of the government just fell on you.
Yeah.
The courts, the police, the lawyer, the prosecutor, the judge. And in the very next second, the entire weight of the United States government came to your defense. You, Barry, have the right to be remain quiet. Oh,
yep.
You don't have a lawyer? We'll get you one. Oh, don't worry about the money. We'll pay for it. And you'll get to be judged by your peers, and you'll get all the rights, and you'll know who accused you, and you'll be, right? The
yeah.
whole government comes to your defense. Man, if that ain't a ticket to ride, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, basically, if there's anything... you know, if just say you did do something, right, and you want to know, well, who snitched on me? You know, where did all this come from? What's happened? You know, who do I need to keep quiet? They tell you when they arrest you. You know, you basically got the information. You can just sit there and just stay stumped. That's it.
Well, you know, look, you're an educated guy. I'm fairly well educated. I'm not afraid of the police.
No.
If I get stopped, I'm never rude.
Crikey,
I respect that they're doing this, right? But if you're, you know, broke and uneducated and unsure of your place in society and you're a minority, it's not so easy to stand up.
Exactly.
To
the cop. Yeah. And I do know what you mean. I must admit, I did nearly get into trouble when I first came over here, only because of my sense of humour. I was lost in. Can't even remember where I was now. Naugatuck. I was lost in Naugatuck, and I was sort of thought I was heading one way, and suddenly I realised I was in this very small, very short, like about 50 yards, one way street, and I was going down the wrong way. And there was a cop car there, and yeah, I just didn't see this. The sign was, you know, just a quick turn sort of thing, and I was looking, trying to find where the hell I was, and he pulled me over, and he asked where I was from, and I said, you know. where I was living, but he said, oh, you're from England? I said, yeah, sort of thing. He said, you realise this is one-way street? Didn't you see the arrows? I said, arrows? I didn't even see the Indians. But it was an automatic. I bit my tongue in half almost as soon as I said it. Luckily, he appreciated it, but I nearly... Yes.
That is really funny.
My tongue ran away with me.
I had to ask you.
Well, the follow-up with that was, you know, do you realise it's a one-way street? Yes, I'm only going one way. But I stopped. I didn't. I didn't want to go into that.
Say, I'm from England. I drive on the wrong side of the road.
No, don't you start me on that. That's all down to the French. We're on the right side of the road. Back in historic times when people were right-handed all the time. Just blame it on the French. That's a long story, and I use it very often, but it's all down to the French why people started driving on the right-hand side of the road. Anyway, you've got this book out, obviously, you know, and there's a huge possibility to it. And as you said, you know, originally you were thinking of about a TV film, and I could see it being a TV film. Very, very... simply, are you writing something else now, or are you just going to sort of flow with this for now?
Well, I have a couple of books that have yet to see the light of day. What I learned a long time ago, when I was younger, I used to think, you write it, you ship it to your agent, you go wait by the bank for the checks.
Yeah.
And somebody said to me, what you should do is when you write something, put it aside for 6 months. 6 months, it sounded like 6 years. Yeah. When you pick it up in 6 months, it's going to read different. Well, lo and behold, that's true. So I've learned to write and put stuff away and come back to it.
Right.
But here's the other thing. If I now, at my advanced age, were to start as a fresh new novelist, as opposed to the other books I've written, mm-hmm. it would take a while for people to find me, and they might never find me.
Right.
But here, if you buy Flynn and Miranda, you're not buying the Joseph B. Wallenstein book. You're buying a book about something that you've heard of your whole life. Mm-hmm. It's a different platform. My fiction novels will be out next year and the year after. Right. And that'll be a different kind of, you know, and I'm hoping if this book, it's always about the money, but it's not really about the money. It's about, well, somebody say, oh, he's the guy that wrote, oh, I wonder what else he's up to.
That's great. I mean, and as I said earlier on, you know, it's something that you believe in and you want people to read and stuff like that. It's in a way, and I know it's a bit of a weird comparison, is, you know, when I get people on who've written stories about families in the Holocaust and stuff like that, the story's there, but you write the book to educate the reader, shall I say.
Sure, because, you know, once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, that's so true. And it is happening more and more that people say, well, I just sat down with so-and-so. We came across these letters from such and, you know, my mother wrote to my father and you know, all that sort of thing. And it's great that the stuff is being shared because, as you say, it get lost in the archives half the time.
How many dancing cats could you look at on the internet?
Exactly, yeah. But if you knew it was a rare cat, first came from Egypt, you know, where it was directly related to Cleopatra, it's a different story.
That's right. You've got a great sense of humor, Barry.
Oh, thank you. As I said, I asked about the response and everything like that. What about what's his name? Flynn. Have any of Flynn's family contacted you?
No, not yet. I deliberately stayed away. Look, I don't want to go into his marriages.
Right.
All that.
Yeah,
that's
true.
What the story was about. And I didn't want to invade their privacy.
No,
even in the book, you'll see what the book is based on is my conversations with him. It's there. You could, if I didn't have it in there, you could always say, ah, this guy Joey made it up.
Right.
Well, it's in there. You could check it out. Everything is in the book is meant to be a dramatic presentation, but everything that's in the book is birthed in my conversations with Flynn.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for being a guest. What I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find out more about you and, of course, your book. Books.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
Sorry.
Well, on this book and my other books are on Amazon. Flynn Miranda, I understand, is Barnes & Noble and Vroman's and Bookstar and Book Nook and where
good.
Else? Target, Barnes & Noble, Walmart. Yeah.
That's good.
My other books, well, they're kind of niche books. Practical Movie Making is about how you make movies, how you really make movies. And Nothing Dies for Film is anecdotal about the stuff that the kids at school have done over the years and how we keep them safe.
Right.
But your viewers may or may not get a kick out of this, and if it's inappropriate, you just cut it out. But the reason why you always check your copyright, not your copyright, but your fact checkers and your editors, when they published Practical Movie Making, a handbook for the real world, when they wrote it up, they wrote Practical Love Making. What, do they turn me into Dear Abby? I'm trying to make a movie.
Oh, my goodness.
You gotta fix that.
I love it. Oh, goodness. I just somebody on a couple of weeks ago about his book ended up as, it was number one on Amazon because they put it under an Iraqi tourist book or something like that. He said it's a number one bestseller because they put it under, and it was a detective thing, and they put it under Iraqi tourist book.
Oh,
anyway,
yeah, terrific. It's wild out there.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I work at USC. IMDb. I've been in the industry forever, it feels like. When I first started my second job, I day checked as a second assistant director on the original Godfather. How long ago was that?
Crikey, yep.
And of all the stuff I did, that's the only credit. It didn't get screen credit. I was like the little red light on the commute boost. That's how far down the only credit at school for kids have any use for.
Well, I tell you what, we actually heard about IMDb last week because a lady who I've known for quite a few years from when she brought her science fantasy books out, is in the process of putting together a film, and she just actually sent an email out today, and with Annabelle Munro is now going to be the director, and she was explaining how it went through and everything with the pilot episode and everything like that. It's called Bridenapped, that's what it's called, and they're due to be shot on June the 5th. So an update for people who heard the show last week, because we didn't have the date for that. Anyway, Joe, it has been great chatting to you. Thank you so much for being a guest on this show. It's been really great having you here, and very, very interesting. I've learned a lot anyway, and let's hope a lot of other people do, and I really appreciate the true story behind this. So thank you very much, and good luck.
Thanks, Barry. You've been very kind, and I appreciate it. Take care, man.
My pleasure. Thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today, Joseph B. Wallenstein. Wallenstein. And we've been talking about his book, really great book. And as he's been telling us, this is sort of straight from Flynn, the Flynn and Miranda. Your Right to Remain Silent is the name of the book. A historical novel about the Miranda case and where it all started and how it had. And he says, as he said, he got all the stuff interviewing Flynn before he was murdered. But terrific, terrific stuff. And I'm sure loads of people would find it very interesting. Well, that's another one today. I'll be back tomorrow. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget...